Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to discuss the offense from that preseason win over the Cowboys. Big one-sided win, really on both sides of the ball, maybe more so on defense than on offense, but it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about this as well. Joining me to do that is Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Doing well. Hope you're doing well, too. Hope everybody out there's excited for the season. Everybody's doing okay.
Yeah, I think the point has been made that we all kind of put our own team under the microscope at this time of year. And if you're a fan of the Ravens, you're trying to figure out what's not quite right. We'll have a tremendous fear of this team failing more than anything else. I mean, certainly the expectations are very high, but there's just tremendous fear of that. I think I see in most fans right now.
I kind of feel it too, more so than last year. I think last year with the offensive line being redone and Zach Orr's first year and all the pieces we lost from PQ to Clowney to Geno Stone, said the offensive line. Everything else, it was kind of more in wait and see mode. And this year I'm looking at next year. I mean, I made the list a while ago, but it was something like 20 plus players that we could be counting on this year will be gone or need a contract to stay. So this year it's, I feel the pressure too. I really do. I feel like we have the team for it. And this time next year, we'll have a lot of moving parts. This year, not so much. The same guys are back. They've gone through the same trials, the same heartbreak together. They're in the same system. Like, that kind of stuff means a lot to me. There's a lot of, it's not like a store-bought team with all these pieces stuck together. This is a great team with some continuity. So I feel it too. I feel the pressure this year. I really hope we can do it and bring home the third Super Bowl.
Yeah, it'd be a big deal. Did a good job of maintaining some drives on offense here. They certainly did a good job of getting the ball back quickly from the Cowboys, whether they did it on downs or they did it on turnovers. We went over that on the defensive show, so we won't go over all that again, of course. I think there are certainly issues you can pick out in the offense. They had some issues with drops and whatnot that I'm sure we'll get to. And I think there is some continuity and some quality of play issues from some twos and threes on the offensive line. And that's not atypical for the preseason. You often have trouble with all of the offensive line kind of playing on the same level because you're switching out players every couple of drives.
Yeah, it really gives you an appreciation for regular season football, and especially early in the season before these teams get beat up. And, it's a hard game to execute what the offensive coordinator wants you to execute. Even the vanilla stuff, you see the timing off on a couple of these throws. And, offensive linemen, and the bar is high. The bar is high in the NFL to execute offense like we saw last year with the Ravens. You need a lot of talent. So appreciate, we're ready for the preseason to be over, Ken, because sometimes, especially towards the end, there's just very few things I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, not much can go right. This last preseason game is always kind of a shorter show. This one will be like the normal length, I'd say, but the last one's usually a shorter show because we're talking about a lot of players who probably are going to be the practice squad or out are their two possibilities, and very few people who are on the bubble or even, you know, contending for a position to play, let alone contending for a position to play, but even fewer people who are really, there's a question about them being on the 53 or not. We had some interesting things come up in this game. One big trial I want to hit on is Rasheen Ali getting extended playing time in this game? Because it's something that's kind of difficult to make sense of. I've got a theory, but I'd like to hear what you think about it. With Rasheen Ali getting 19 carries in a game like this.
I actually think I'm your guy, a good person for this show, Ken. Because I just wanted to, with Rasheen Ali topic specifically I was talking about. But this kind of seemed like, okay, if something happens, he gets dinged up or whatnot, you still have 3 weeks until the first game of the season. So Ali, of course, didn't get a lot of carries last year. I thought that this was a good opportunity for him to be the workhorse, especially considering, and this is really the key point to me, is that D'Ernest Johnson and Myles Gaskin, very new to the team. So I wasn't as surprised, I think, as you are with the workload. And I think a function of that was just so many plays on the offense, having the defense dominating. So, you know, it's preseason. We're going to run the ball a lot. We're keeping it simple. So Ali needs his touches, experience, yada, yada, yada. And then our two other running backs are brand new.
Well, okay. I got a different theory, and I think there's good reasons why the D'Ernest Johnson was around last week and got 18 carries, 19 carries, whatever it was. He carried he was the bell cow for the running backs last week, and he didn't get as many carries this week. He only had 11, and Ali got more, whereas Ali only got 9 in game one. Now Keaton Mitchell was around to take carries, but why wouldn't you have Ali for an extended trial in game one if it's one more week, separated from the beginning of the regular season?
Well, same thing for Cooper Rush, though.
They gave him more playing time. They gave him a little more playing time this week. That's right. That's
exactly
true. So you're saying it's 1 week closer. Okay.
It's right. This was kind of, I guess what, to me, it was like the dress rehearsal of week three preseason's past, when the starters would actually play for a half or plus. That's kind of what I took out of that. Look, let's give Cooper Rush a lot of run. Let's give Ali a lot of run. Let's give Devontae Walker a lot of run. Let's give Kolar a lot of run. So it's not just Ali. There were players that are going to be a big part of this team that got extra run in this game. And that's kind of what I saw.
There is a consistency there. The Kolar thing is a player I was kind of concerned about his amount of play too. All right. I won't say that's not it, but I will say I'd consider another theory here too, is that they basically already know they're not going to keep Ali at least for long. Now Harbaugh said they're going to start the season with four running backs, and he thinks he's on the same page with EDC because they talk about it every day. I think that they might start the season with four running backs because Likely is hurt. So if they put him on IR to start the year, They're doing that to commit to that breaks down anything you would say about having a 26-24 roster, because they can't really do that if they get a fourth running back. If they get a fourth running back, they're committing to the 25-25 like they have in all years. It's not like it'd be a big surprise, because they've only, like, one time they've ever gotten away from that. But I honestly think they're showing Ali off to the rest of the league here, and they're giving him a chance to make his case to be either released and have a place to go, or possibly be traded for something at the end of camp here. I hear what Harbaugh is saying. I think he would be okay keeping Ali maybe as the fourth running back for a limited period of time until Likely comes back. Hopefully that means that there's not another player's out, but it does kick the can down the road on that decision with Ali to have him on the roster for 4 weeks. If you then lose Keaton Mitchell, or you lose Justice Hill, or, you know, God forbid you lose Derrick Henry during that time, you still have three running back committee.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is where we're going to disagree tonight. And I'm glad I'm one to give an opposing side instead of agreeing with you, just because I think most fans agree with you. And that's what I've seen, is that we should keep three running backs. Why are we keeping Ali? he's not this, he's not that, he's not explosive. You can find these guys on the street. And I just don't think that Harbaugh is going to trust just anyone back there on kick returns. And I look at Ali as kick returner one. And the reason I say that, of course, is because you need two guys back there. So
kick returner one ahead of Mitchell?
No, they're both number one, is what I'm saying. Okay. There are two guys back there. And if you know, you've seen how they line up during the preseason, one's on one side of the field, the other's on the other side.
No. It's a split field operation. Right.
So if you're the other team, and Harbaugh alluded to the fact that, you know, you're going to see teams get creative with the kicks. We saw us get creative with the kicks. A little squibbit. Are you going to kick it to Keaton Mitchell or the other guy? I'm pretty sure they're going to kick it towards the other guy when they have a chance. So that's where I look at Ali's role on this team as a return guy. And then the other part of that, Ken, is that Keaton Mitchell, the injury that he had was a freak injury, a terrible injury. Mm-hmm. Nothing he could do about it. He was banged up in the preseason that rookie year. He's banged up again now. He's not built to be a workhorse back. So I think that the Ravens may say, look, we want to limit Keaton touch. Even if something happened to Justice Hill or something happened to Derrick Henry, Keaton Mitchell is a 8-touch-a-game type of guy, and we want a third running back or fourth in this case, running back there. So I think Ali is on the team as long as he doesn't fumble the opportunity away. And I know that's a minority opinion among Ravens fans, but again, I'm looking at him as a starting kick returner. With these new rules and Harbaugh's background, I think Mitchell's going to return a lot of kicks this year with teams kicking away from Keaton Mitchell whenever they can.
Okay, so to put that responsibility, put a context around it, you know, the Ravens could be expected to have 5 kickoffs they receive per game. That seems even a little high. They might allow 20 points per game if they did that, get the opening kickoff, 4 other scores. They're going to get 5 kickoff return opportunities.
Right.
Sound about right. Okay. So 2.5 of them are going to be Ali on that side, or maybe you say it's 3-2 because they're trying to kick away from Mitchell, which they may or may not really be able to get done on a regular basis. But let's say it's 3-2 to Ali. I say Ali, that's not a big enough context. Ali would need to do something else on a football field to help you out, to make him worth carrying or worth activating on a week-to-week basis. For that alone. Otherwise, I mean, you've got other options. Miles Gaskin, Dearness Johnson could be on the practice squad, each get 3 elevations. Ali could be on the practice squad and get 3 elevations, which is another thing we haven't really talked about yet. You have some time to make that decision. I think Ali would have to do something else on special teams. I don't know what else Ali does. I don't know if he's done any kickoff coverage or whatever.
I thought he did. I could be mistaken. That's something I should have looked up.
We'll look it up right now.
I look it up right now. But Ken, you know, these decisions near the sideline and the amount of, I want to say, variance in the kickoff game now, kick returning. Yeah. I think that they really want, Harbaugh, that they really want someone dependable back there. If it was me, I would have give Wester a look. And I know they want running backs back there, but Wester sure looked good in the open field and in instinctual. And it's not the old, I know he's light, but it's not the old, run 30 yards straight into somebody injury risk that it used to be on kickoff. So I would have liked to see Wester get a shot, but I'm having a hard time finding it here, Ken.
I've got it in front of me. Ali last year played 40 snaps of special teams across 6 games. Now, he did play 4 units of the core 4 units: kick returns, kick coverage, punt returns, punt coverage, in 24. So, okay, I mean there's a larger context there. I mean, it does make him a pure special teams player because he ain't going to do anything as the fourth running back. I mean, he's not going to go out there and take 4 carries a game even as a fourth running back. They didn't get any carries for the third running back for, 11 weeks or something last year? It was some ridiculous.
Exactly. Hopefully it's the same case this year, Ken, because, man, do we have a talented room. But, yeah, like I said, I'm glad to be on to present that opposite opinion. It's something I've been saying on my show for a few weeks. Okay. And not be surprised if we keep 4 running backs because of this new world we're in the return game and the Keaton not really being the most durable back so far in his 2-year career.
Okay, I mean that's certainly fair. Let's talk about risk on the other side of that. If you cut Ali, do you think there's a substantial chance he gets picked up off the waiver wire?
Not sure. You know, I always have a hard time feeling for that. I was more going by the offensive line, and from what I've seen, you know, because if you keep four running backs, that would knock you down to 9 offensive linemen instead of 10. Of course, Carson Vincent, you know, redshirting this year, so it's really 8. So I'm looking at, if I were to project the roster right now, you know, you have your starting 5, then you have Note Boom 6, Ben Cleveland 7, and then Corey Bullock 8 to go along with Vincent. So that would leave Dillinger and Samak off of my roster prediction right now. And what I'm thinking there is that neither one of those guys are claimable, or if they are, they're pretty interchangeable. So that's kind of my thinking. I don't think that there's much of a difference between.
I think you might be overcounting a spot here. Let's just make sure we go through this, okay? How many tight ends, and including Ricard, do you have on the?
Well, I'm assuming that Likely is going to be on the roster.
Oh, okay. Well, that's it right there, because I'm assuming he's not, and that makes what makes room for Ali.
Right. So there you go. Okay.
Okay.
Either way, though, I guess what I'm saying with the offensive linemen is that I think that there is a good chance that Dillinger and Samak, I was trying to answer your question in that way, would be hanging on the roster spot. Dalcourt, I don't see a lot of difference variance among their play. They just seem like the same level. You hope you don't have to play them type guys right here in year one.
Okay. I have some information on Dillinger to talk about because we scored him tonight, but I would be really surprised if they didn't keep him on offensive lineman. It's a 9-to-keep-8 situation they need to be in, right? So, but you can't count then Vincent as one of the 9. Or you might have to activate him as the 8th offensive lineman for a game, and he actually played pretty well in this last game against Dallas, which I'll talk about. But I think that means you really, because of the amount of like little nick up ding up injuries you have, that you've got to keep 9 offensive linemen you wouldn't mind having on the field to have 8 on Sunday that you can go with. There's just too many small injuries that occur to offensive linemen, so. I'd be very surprised if they didn't keep 10 this year with a redshirt year going on with Vincent.
Okay, so like calling up Dillinger, Samak, using your practice squad on them for that emergency guy on game day through the Nixon bruises wouldn't be an option. Dalcourt, all those guys.
Like
you need them on your roster.
What's the chance of losing Dillinger, and how much do I care about it relative to the chance of losing Ali, and how much do I care about that? That's how I'm boiling down this question. I would be much more seriously concerned about losing Dillinger than losing Ali.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we can go through that, maybe talk about it a little bit relative to some scoring later on in the thing. Let's keep it moving here, because I think we're getting kind of hung up on this, and I respect your opinion on this, buddy. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Statistical manhandling of the Cowboys, 26-7 in first downs, 399-176 in yardage, and 79-47 in offensive snaps, which is, that's what we want to see from the 2025 Ravens. Don't need to see a bunch of passing yards. We want to see the 79-47 in snaps. They're going to win a lot of ball games if they do that. Is it fun to watch preseason football when your team's winning this handily?
No, it's nothing but anxiety to me. That's just me, though. I want to say, exactly, it's injury risk. I want to say I'm happy Ravens football's on the screen. I hear Jerry Sandusky's voice, and, you know, I get happy when I see Lamar and Henry on the sideline, and, oh, man, look at all this talent. Ronnie Stanley's over there and Roquan. But mostly, especially, you know, like if this past game, if Keaton would have been in, or there are certain players I just don't want to see out there. So, yeah, mostly anxiety. We lost Isaac in this game.
So. Yeah, it was awful. I mean, that's just a miserable situation. You know, that is one of the things that, this is terrible to say this, but Ajabo gives you as a player, if he's on the roster, is he gives you an automatic deactivation every week, an automatic inactive. You have to have 5. 2 were coming from the offensive line if they keep 10 linemen. Okay. Then you've got Ajabo as a pretty easy one. And then you've got 2 more you've got to find probably from the defense. And there's a question of how you would assign those would be, you've got a few different ways you could do it. But Ajabo is, I'm afraid he's going to be a healthy scratch a lot of weeks if he makes the team, as it stands right now. And I think, do you have a strong feeling that the Ravens should not be considering other outside the building alternatives at this point?
I don't know. I'll be excited if, Clowney, for example, came back. I know that's the name, but it would just be hard for me to say no to him, Ken, because he seemed so motivated and played so well here. And I mean, from some of the stats and advanced stats I saw last year on a terrible team, he played pretty well again. Yeah. So I could definitely see him, but I'm really excited about the top four that we have in that room. It's a really good, diverse group.
All right. All right. Well, great stuff. Let's go and talk about the order of entry on offense, because that always tells you a lot. Rush and Leary, obviously, that was the order of quarterback. No surprise in terms of the order. You mentioned that Rush got a little more playing time than he did in the first game. I think Leary entered in quarter two in the first game. In the second game, Rush played the entire first half. So it's more like seasons past when the second team quarterback got a little more play. Are you ready to bubble wrap Rush for game three after a performance like he had this on Saturday night?
I wouldn't be surprised. I could go either way. I'm not going to be super frustrated or scared if he's in the game. But I would say I would prefer to bubble wrap him. I would prefer that, just because you see how quickly quarterback play falls off from all pro Lamar to back up to where Devin Leary is now in his career. And it's like this team could win three or four if Lamar missed a month with Cooper Rush with this roster. And I can't say the same about Devin Leary, unfortunately. That's just my own personal opinion on that. So I would like to see Rush bubble wrapped. I'm not convinced it would happen. But what I think will happen is Rush, Rosengarten, Note Boom, those guys will sit. The guys that got that cameo in the first preseason game, I think they sit.
So Note Boom actually played four series. He played two on the left, two on the right. Rosengarten and Fa'alele sat down right away. And yeah, Voorhees also played the cameo role there. I guess we're going out a little out of turn if we're talking offensive line here, but I'm already really concerned about Note Boom as the backup left tackle or right tackle. He didn't look very good in this game in terms of being able to hold up to pressure. All right. Well, back to Rush in terms of his statistics. Obviously had a mediocre passer rating for the game, but I thought he was very effective in a few places. First of all, the two interceptions, I thought each of them, he was betrayed by somebody. The first one by the official. Also, Wester kind of gave up on the ball once he thought he had been interfered with, which I didn't like, but He was betrayed by the official. And the second one, Ali, just, his receiving skills have been terrible at the NFL level. And that one, the ball went right through his hands for the interception.
Yeah, on the rush, the first one, I guess I would assign some blame to Rush just for staring that down and throwing that ball anyway. Mm-hmm. But point stands, and I agree with you. And then Ali, it's just, I spent the first part of the show taking up for him. But, man, when he was coming out, Ken, his receiving ability was – part of what was attractive is his pass protection and his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. And I think you kind of just alluded to it. That's been an issue. His hands have been an issue the first, year in the preseason since he's been here. When it comes to Cooper Rush, I thought he made some good throws. He saw the back shoulder. He was able to push the ball downfield. And again, there's just you mentioned at the top where we're looking for things to be upset about, like, if you're one of your main concerns is that Cooper Rush is your backup, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. Yeah. In a relative sense, particularly if Lamar Jackson is your number one. So.
Yes. Yes. I think we're pretty good in the quarterback rankings.
Yeah. Leary came in. It wasn't terrible like it was the first week. He basically protected the football pretty well, got it almost knocked out of his hands, but recovered it, ran for a couple of yards positive on one of the very early plays from scrimmage they had in that third quarter. And he basically kept the ball out of harm's way for most of the game. Rush, I think there were some designed throws that were going to be contested more often than not in this game for Rush that made it difficult. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, throwing to Wester, throwing to Wade. The Ali throw, that wasn't designed to be contested at all. The throws that were designed to be contested are the Walker crossing and comeback routes. Those things, they took Walker completely out of his comfort zone in this game in order to throw him a number of balls that would help him enhance, I believe, what he can do at the top of the stem. He's got to be able to, run some different routes effectively, and fight for the football, come back to fight for the football and cross and fight for the football as needed.
Agreed. I was really impressed with Devontae's. Just the signs are so positive, because if he was having a good preseason just by running by guys, running post routes and blown coverages, and, you know, that would be one thing, because that's what he was known for coming out of college. Mm-hmm. But to see him improve on, you know, part of what made him slip in the draft. Well, he's not a complete route runner, but his footwork looks so much more efficient right now than it did this time last year. This time last year, it was extra steps. It was extra movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's never going to be Justin Jefferson probably with his route running, or be able to cut on a dime like Zay Flowers. But when you have the kind of speed and height that he has, so that really enhances his threat deep, because he's not just like Zay Flowers can run deep routes, but Devontae can go up and get the ball contested, you know, downfield as well, elevate. You don't have to be the best route runner when you have those skills, because guys are already giving you a little bit of a cushion. So it doesn't bother me that his, you know, the out route was a little bit rounded. He was on time, Ken. He was on time with his things. There weren't extra steps slowing him down, and just very, very proud of him. Very proud of Devontae.
Worked through some distractions to make catches. The chop from, I think it was Booth on the right sideline, right through a catch there was good. You know, he took a couple hits as he caught the ball, and then you know, someone was hitting him shortly thereafter. This is the big thing, though. I mean, 6 yak on 6 catches. Now, the nature of those throws were low chance for yak. You know, you throw somebody right into the sideline, you're not throwing them into a position with yak. You throw somebody right underneath the linebacker, you're not throwing them into a position for yak. When you throw a comeback route, it can be a yak route, but you need Zay Flowers or Wester or somebody like that to do it, to U-turn their way out of a reception like that. That's not Devontae Walker.
And the first throw was behind him, by the way.
That was a really good catch. That
was a really nice job. Yeah. You know, prevented some yak, though, he didn't have a chance to turn it up the sideline. But again, yeah, Doug, just building on your point there, Ken.
Going back to North Carolina, he only had 2.8 yak per reception his senior season, and or I guess it might have been his junior season, but his last season in college. And he had only 2 missed tackles the whole year. That is the central problem there, and why his yak was so low. Devontae Walker's not going to give you a lot of yards after the catch. And the other thing is, even really, without a tremendous improvement to the hitch and comeback routes, to the routes that come back to the quarterback that can get him the football, he's not really going to be opened up as a deep threat either. It's just it's too easy for defensive backs to sit on what he does at the top of the stem. Because he's big, that makes him a good contested catch player, but also makes him bad in terms of how far he has to sink his hips and how much of that he has to give away to the cornerback directly opposite him, as he's deciding on, you know, try to sell a route one way or the other. You know, really has to sit in the chair, as they would say on, you know, on prospects, in terms of decelerating that way. Whereas Zay Flowers sticks his foot in the ground, turns left, right, you know, you got to follow the Maserati.
Yes. Yeah. And again, he just plays high cut. So, mm-hmm. You know, I can see him working the middle of the field and running those post routes and splitting the safeties and doing all that kind of stuff at the NFL level. But he doesn't have to be, he doesn't have to sit in the chair. He doesn't have to have that elite hip sync. If he's winning deep and he's getting that cushion. So it was great to see him win on a variety of routes, especially with it. You know, Cooper Rush doesn't have a cannon for an arm. So you got to win.
Yeah. I thought one of the plays in this game that really got me was the 4th-and-1 touchdown pass to Kirkwood was open for a long time.
It was. Rush
took time to recognize it. Then he took time to throw it. Then the ball takes forever to get there. I mean, literally, you're.
Kirkwood looked relieved, like relieved that he finally got it. Yeah. It was funny. He was open for a good 10 yards running horizontally.
And it's a good thing that Kirkwood is able to use his body effectively on that catch, I thought. Now, Rush did a lot of good things in this game. Don't get me wrong. He made some good throws. But the other thing, so let's go back to Rush for a second. The other thing that was good about Rush's game was that I thought he really stood in the pocket, stood upright, and got his ball out while he was under pressure. And he got it out just in time a number of times in this game. There were a fair number of ball out quicks where he was getting borne down on, but there were a number of others where he took a hit or had a pressure in progress where he got the ball out and he threw the ball effectively. Milton had the one big throw that way. He had, the 49-yard throw, right? That was Milton, not Greer. I think it was Milton.
I think that was Milton.
Yeah. And that was under significant duress and still got it off. But I thought Rush was very good in that regard too. All right, let's move on to running back. So we already talked. Henry, Hill, and Mitchell all rested for this game. Mitchell still injured. Harbaugh still saying it's nothing serious. But Ali was first up. Johnson was second, and Gaskin was third. Gaskin kind of waited a long time to get into the ball game. With Ali, kept the position for a while here. You and I have debated that a little bit in terms of why they might have been doing it. Johnson then came in. He looked really good. Ali had 7 out of 19 successes. Let's start with that. This is 39%. Not what you want, but Lamar Jackson's not the quarterback, so you're not expecting him to be above 50% probably. But he did. He certainly was not there. And he did not do much after contact in this game. That had been a good thing in the first game. But this game, it was 19 carries and 2 missed tackles. At the NFL level, you really should be about 0.25 per run.
Yeah, this was odd because he was talking about Ali. He was hitting in the backfield a lot, no chance runs, and then he had a couple of longer ones, where the blocking was bad and he bounces it outside, or it was the blocking wasn't there and he cut it back. So I don't think the offensive line did him a ton of favors. It looked like the linebackers played really well for Dallas, filling gaps. So it was a feast or famine type run game for Ali, though. He had some really nice runs and had some ones where he was dropped in the backfield.
Yeah, he also did not have a breakaway run, truly. Like his long run of the day was 11 yards. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. If you stack up, 4 or 5 11-yard runs, you can still have a good day. But you really need some breakaway runs in a 19-carry game, 1 or 2, to be in that 15-plus yard range, at least for a run, to get excited about it. All right, well, Johnson came on. He was very effective, from any statistical angle. He had, 3 of 11 broken tackles, so that's right in the normal kind of range. And he had, 6 of 11 successes on the play, so that's good, particularly with not Lamar Jackson in the game. A lot to like about Johnson, I thought, in this game. Runs very hard and did a lot of individual running in this game.
He's a solid player. And again, really impressed with him, especially last week, coming in, handling a workload, and it's just a pro. I remember, we've gotten a chance to see him a little bit in Cleveland. So familiar with his style, physical runner, has some 3-down capabilities, I think, in his game as far as pass protection. And, people will look at him as a 2-down back and understand why, but he's a pro. If it's 1st and 10, you want to go some kind of deep shot downfield. I feel like you can trust him back there to recognize the coverage and or recognize the pass rush and pick something up if he has to.
Yeah. I've been very happy with him in the preseason. He returned kicks in this game. Obviously, one of the things that didn't work out for him is he put the ball on the ground on one of his returns. So then he recovered his own fumble. But I am afraid that Harbaugh will look at that and say, that's not a guy we can afford to elevate, or that's the third guy we want to elevate if we have other choices. But he is a sort of guy, if you cut Ali and you're left with Johnson, I just don't see a huge drop off that there in terms of returnability, that you wouldn't have that guy under, you know, the very cheap, you don't have to carry on the roster. You just elevate him three times, then you find somebody else on your, you know, as a game day activation.
Yeah. I'm obviously a bigger fan of Ali. I just, I do like the Ernest Johnson and Gaskin, man. He looked like he, he had a rocket attached to him somewhere. It was really fun. And they said on the broadcast, he hadn't had a carry since 2021 or 2022. So
three carries for minus 1 yards in the last 2 years.
So, I mean, that it amazes me. It just goes to show you, Ken, how fast these guys disappear, because I remember Myles Gaskin in Miami looking like part of that, you know, Mike McDaniel fast group. Everybody else out there is fast. And then you're like, wait, Myles Gaskin hasn't had, but whatever you said, a few carries in the last couple of years. That amazed me. But, man, he looked determined and fresh. And, like, you know, you only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime type running style from Gaskin. There's a little M&M for you, Ken.
Yeah, I like the way he looked too, and I think that he's a guy who can help the Ravens, possibly from the practice squad, also be a guy who could be elevated on an as needed basis to fill out your running back group or to fill out your return group. Let's move on to tight end. Andrews rested, likely, obviously, is out for the near future at least. Kohler had the extremely heavy workload that you mentioned, and putting the pieces together, I think you're making a reasonable assumption that they're trying to get Kohler some receiving time in a game like this more than anything else, because his receiving total has been very low the last few years. But he could get three targets. He caught them all. I think it was about 20 yards in the game, might have been 21 or something. But he had a lot of blocking snaps too. Looked pretty good as a blocker. I thought that's been a fairly...
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Consistent thing for Kohler. Anything else to say about him? Because they had other options in this game. They had three guys behind him who could have really taken his snaps.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I really believe, you know, what I said at the beginning with Rush and Ali and Kohler all getting their dress rehearsal. And for Kohler specifically, Ken, I thought it was in the receiving game. As you just said, well, like they know he's got plenty of experience now, as funny as it sounds, as an inline blocking tight end. Like, I think they know what they have there. But this was a chance for Charlie to split out wide and play the Mark Andrews role a little bit, play the Isaiah Likely role a little bit, or less so though. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked good. Like, spoiler alert, but he's going to be last on my players of the game, my third choice, because I like the way he was running his routes. I like the way he was coming off the line of scrimmage. Of course, I like the blocking work that he did, but it's just like, it was stuff that didn't show up in the stat sheet is why I'm putting it like that, Ken. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the way he looked. Everything was on time. I think with a better supporting cast around him. And if you wanted to use the tight end in this game, you wanted to use Kohler, that, you know, for a 60-minute ball game in the middle of the season with Lamar Jackson and the starters, with him in that role, he could have had a, you know, 6-7 catch type game. He looked like a starter playing in a preseason game.
Yeah, that's That's what he ought to have looked like playing in this game. The three guys behind him, Mitchell Payton, Scotty Washington, Kupp, came in the game basically in that order. Mitchell Payton, by the way, has played a ton of lifetime preseason football. When I say that, it's approaching 400 snaps of preseason football. I did look that up earlier. It might have been over 400 now.
Wow.
That he's played career without playing a single snap of regular season football.
Man.
So it's 3 years with the Browns on their practice squad, comes to the Ravens, is on the Ravens practice squad now, in Ravens camp now, getting an additional year. And you just wonder, I mean, the guy that was on the Ravens roster who might approach that kind of a total is Carson Vinson, because almost all he would have to do is not really be ready to go next year, or have it be close that they're so worried about his development, and play the entire preseason again next year. He'd almost be there.
I would say there's a very high chance that happens with Carson. I think, if Rosengarten's getting two series this preseason, then chances are next preseason, Carson Vinson's going to be getting a ton of run, unless he's projected to be a starter, which I think would be too fast for him.
I think the question would be, can Vincent be your number three? Can he take the Joe Noteboom rule next year?
Right.
And that it's a stretch goal, but that would be really cool if he could. And I really liked what I saw from Vincent. I don't want to give it away before we go through the scoring.
Go ahead, Ken. There's not much to talk about for me with the tight end. So if you have any other analysis, go for it, bud.
I want to save it for the second part of the show because we've got some balance up. But let's go through the order of that they came in the game. So Mitchell Payton got the charge of the false start. He had a bunch of receptions in Cleveland. This was actually his first reception as a Raven, this 11-yard throw he got in this game.
Okay. Yeah, I really don't have much to add here the tight ends. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He's been hit or miss as a blocker was the other thing that I've kind of felt like about Mitchell Payton. He's certainly made some mistakes doing that. They've tried to use him a little bit as a pass blocker as well as send him out in the pattern. Scotty Washington, I actually thought so. Gianna Han came around camp for the banner survey and they ask you one stock up, start down, then give up dark horse. And I'm standing there next to Childs Walker. Childs Walker said Mitchell Payton, and I thought Scotty Washington was the more likely tight end to take Likely's role. And there aren't a lot of dark horses on this entire offensive side of the ball. I mean, there just aren't a lot of dark horses. They're on the defense, there's some. But Scotty Washington was the guy I picked. And now it looks like Mitchell Payton's just clearly ahead of him in the pecking order. They for whatever reason, Scotty Washington just not on their radar to the same degree. All right, Baylor Kupp came in last. He's had a little bit of run with other teams, but I think Baylor Kupp played for the Chiefs at one point. I think who else he's actually had time with. I want to say the Rams, but I got to believe that's Cooper Kupp I'm thinking of.
Same number too.
One game with Kansas City last year. Yeah.
Yeah, Kansas City wave. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
So. He caught two passes for 13 yards. It doesn't look like there's anything really wrong with him. He's a big guy. Maybe like either Mitchell Payton or like Kohler with the right kind of time and effort into his blocking, he could be a more significant force. I also like the fact that Lucas Scott really looks like a I won't say clone, but in a lot of ways very similar to Ricard. He's a guy who's played some tackle in his career, offensive tackle at Army, and then he weighs 290 pounds. I did not know he weighed that much.
It's amazing. I thought that he's been a underrated star of these first two preseason games. The old phrase, take your time but hurry up, he does a really good job of that, his timing. Mm-hmm. But there's urgency for him to get there, Ken. But there's not a lot of head ducking or missing, people pulling the red cape out the bull type situations happening with him. I thought that he's done a really good job on all kinds of blocks, and I think you can see the offensive line chops, and that those come in handy. We've seen many, many times where Pat Ricard is handling a defensive end, or maybe it's some kind of misdirection or boot action, and Pat Ricard's out there blocking whoever is the first person to challenge Lamar in that area. So I think that it's been great for for Scott to just be able to where we can run our same offense. Mm-hmm. We can give those kind of looks to the running backs, to the quarterbacks, and really allow us to have Pat Ricard out there without actually having Pat Ricard out there.
At some point, injuries will catch up with Patrick, and he's been very fortunate. He hasn't missed too much time in season. A lot of his missed time has come between seasons, getting like surgery on his hip and that sort of thing. And we take kind of for granted that he's going to be around forever, but the end has got to be coming near for him.
Tough guy. And, you know, just quick question from my friend, Ken, will the Ravens continue having a fullback after Patrick Ricard, or is this, they're making an exception because Ricard's so good of a player and is so good of a fullback that they're keeping him. But, you know, Todd Monken say offense really doesn't operate with one.
So Monken inherited a lot of the run scheme from Roman that was here before. And he's obviously picked up on that, and he's adapted very well to playing extremely heavy personnel. Some of that is no doubt Ricard, but it's also been multiple tight ends who can catch the ball as well. I would not be surprised if they try to keep it. I actually think it's more a function of what Ricard can give you, given you have, or what Ricard or Lucas Scott can give you, given they also have Lamar Jackson. I think first of all, Ricard himself is another element of misdirection to add to the offense. So you can go jet, you can lead with Ricard and have him go opposite of where Lamar is going, for example. You can even lead with Ricard on Jackson's trajectory and have some running back take the ball in the opposite direction. Jet might be the most useful there, but you could even send Henry go in the other direction, or Mitchell, you know, certainly right, to try and outflank the defense from the backfield that way. I think there's so much value to having a fullback playing with Lamar Jackson that I don't think you pull it out from there necessarily.
So you don't think a tight end could do it like the other teams, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
I like the Ravens' way of having a non-standard fullback who's well over 230 to 240 pounds and is this, you know, what do you call it, Swiss Army knife type of guy. I like the pure blocking types for the Ravens' offense.
Lucas Scott looks really good, and he fits that mold, like you're saying, Ken. Could he play offensive line? Sure. And, you know, I could see him being quick enough to execute some of these wham blocks. Yet another way that the Ravens use Ricard is to just not block a guard and have Ricard come down and block him on a quick hitter.
Before the current roster rules, it used to be you'd carry 7 offensive linemen on game day. Typically, not every team did it, but most teams would carry 7 and they try and get through the game with that. And if they had 3 injuries, then you'd have to have somebody more often a tight end or somebody you'd bring in. If the Ravens had that happen a few years ago, a guy like Crockett Gilmore might have ended up at offensive tackle to finish out a game. Now I think it'd be Lucas Scott. I think he'd be the guy they'd put in. I don't know if they put him in at guard or tackle, but one of the two. And they'd try and get through the game that way. But it's much less likely to happen, exponentially less likely with having one additional offensive lineman out there. All right, we move on to wide receiver?
Sure.
Okay, so they rested the big 3, Bateman, Flowers, Hopkins. Hopkins apparently has some knee problem he's working on right now in terms of an injury, so hopefully that's not a long-lasting one. Then they really started the game with Wester, Walker, and Wallace on the field, so the 3 W's and Wade being left out of this version of the W's. Walker obviously was the primary target there. Wallace was only in for a couple series. He played, 6 or 7 snaps. It was a low total. And then Wester had a very tough night, a very, very tough night, particularly after that first game.
I think the Ravens learned a little bit about LeJonte as a receiver in this game, at least just for now. I'm not saying projecting forward. But the idea that he could be a Z receiver, be Zay's backup, I think he might be a little bit, that's a developmental type role for him. I think that if you want to use him now, you use him in the slot, you use him on quick hitters, you try to mismatch him in that kind of way. Because running, you know, facing these 6'1" cornerbacks on the outside, who can really get physical with you, I don't think is the way to go. I think that you need a little bit extra space to work with. That said, it was one game. You know, I don't want to, you know, put the stock all the way down on Wester, but it was kind of a couple of rough looks at him getting just bullied out there. What was it? At least twice, I can remember.
Twice. So twice, he I think he really got interfered with, and he wanted a flag, didn't get one. The first one was interception. The second one is a pass defense, where literally the who was the cornerback is pride, I think. He had his left arm on his Wester's shoulder, is literally twisting his body back away from the football. While his right arm's reaching across his body to deflect the football. I mean, it's a great play by Pride if you can get away from it, with it, and he did.
Right.
But I thought it was pretty clearly interference. Harbaugh was even more animated on that one than on the first. I think he probably was more pissed off with Wester on the first one, that Wester was asking for the flag before he started to play defense himself.
Right.
Try and knock that ball down. But then he also just dropped the ball. I mean, there's a ball thrown out 12 yards on the right sideline. Q1702 is a time reference if you want to take a look at it. He just dropped the ball prior to contact. You know, and it was a Keystone Cops kind of, you know, bobbled it up first, then knocked it away, and then the defensive back is jumping over and almost made the interception on the play, which made it that much worse. So it was an ugly kind of a drop. And then the last one, I didn't think it was bad that that it happened the way it did, but he was bracketed very tightly on the right sideline. And there are two plays that kind of match this general description. One was Wester and the other was Wade. Okay. So the Wester play, he was bracketed on the right sideline by Pride and Smith, and the pass dropped like 3 yards to his right, but inbounds. So very dangerous pass. So he said 2-1 over there. You think he might, that ball has a good chance to be intercepted. But they both followed Wester. The Dallas defensive backs didn't track the football in the air really at all. Unfortunately, Wester, you know, took them away from the football instead of going to it himself, which might have actually caused more problems on that play had he done it.
Yeah, it's a good recap right there. And I just reiterate, if we do bring him in the game, want to use him, let's just run some drag routes, some gadget type plays, ways to get the ball in his hand without really having him. If he's covered or if he's close to being covered, you don't want to test that at this point in his career. He needs to get a little bit stronger. And of course, he probably doesn't have very much work with Lamar. So that chemistry is probably going to need to be built.
What we saw in the punt returns on the first game should really help him on wide receiver screens, for example, and other plays where he can get the ball in space and try and make use of his ability to beat players in space. That was just his work there was remarkable in that first game. And I do feel like it could be used on offense. And if you're looking for like, what can Devontae Walker do and what can Wester not do? Devontae Walker is the guy you want running a vertical route and trying to use. And you talked about this earlier, his height to get an advantage, even if his separation is not elite on a deep route. You hope also at some point he can get elite separation, because he's very fast. It's just a matter of he needs to sell more at the top of the route to do that probably. But with Wester, he's the guy I want catching the ball behind the line of scrimmage. Walker's elusiveness is not very much, and having him catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage on a wide receiver screen would not be appropriate. Having Walker is the guy you want blocking on that play.
Exactly. So they complement each other in that way. I mean, again, we're talking about guys that we're hoping emerge and earn themselves roles. But, you know, if Hopkins is banged up already. And one more thing on Walker, if you don't mind, Ken. I've been impressed with his blocking. Mm-hmm. And I expect it to get better. And I think that this is a very important aspect of his game if he wants to play, especially if he wants to be that slot receiver. And again, stretching the seam of the defense, stressing the safeties, even if he's not getting the ball, being asked to clear out room for, think about the intermediate targets, Zay on those dig routes, Mark and likely over the middle, Bateman working the intermediate. Like, we have some excellent intermediate targets. So Tez could be a real weapon for us just to clear out space. Go ahead and run up the seam, line up in the slot, Tez, run up the seam, take a safety or two with you, and open up that middle area. But in order for him to do that, Ken, as you know, he is going to have to be the first receiver up in the blocking game. Just like they like Wallace to come crack block on linebackers, or, you know, he's going to be right there on, you know, closest to the line of scrimmage. That's why I said first receiver up. But I like the way that he's using his length. keeping his feet moving.
Yeah.
I think that he can get more physical, can get better at it. Obviously, he's got room to grow in that area, but I like the steps that he's taking. It looks like the want to is there, and the he's very conscious of using his length as showed up to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're right. I think he keeps his feet very well. If I had to point to one thing, and this is often true of wide receivers, so I'm not getting on him specifically for this, is they don't always maintain blocks exceptionally well, which takes a lot of footwork to do that, because you have to do what a guard does as he pivots through to open the front gate on the right guard, say typically in a right-handed run offense. You got to pivot through and get that defensive tackle twisted. He needs to do the same thing with cornerbacks and safeties when he has a chance to block them, is keep his feet and reposition his body continually with the running back's position.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on. Kirkwood and Wade came in the game. They were kind of next up. Kirkwood, of course, caught that 4th-and-1 ball, which is a nice play. We've talked about a little bit. Wade didn't have a terrible game this week. He did have a terrible game the first week, where I think three balls and no, he had three targets and two of them were intercepted. That's what it was. And the third one was incomplete. So this week he caught 4 out of 6 balls and had, I think, 45 yards on the game. Here's the difference there. Wade's yardage, 45 yards of receiving, 48 yak.
Excellent. That's the kind of Z level qualities that you like to see right there with the make you miss. And Kirkwood, just a big target, professional target. And the touchdown was really funny. He was very patient with that. Had to really pace himself. It looked like he could have got the ball 3 times. And when he did get it, like I said, I sensed a sense of relief. Like, finally, come on. I mean, this has been a touchdown for 5 straight seconds. So I finally got it. But I like Kirkwood a lot. Wade, he seems like he runs hot and cold. Has that been kind of the theme in camp?
Yeah, he hasn't had a, first of all, yes, I'd say. And second of all, I don't think he's had nearly as good a preseason as he did last year. So we're seeing the cold side. Last year, he was the Ravens probably MVP in the preseason offensively, right, with a huge amount of catches and yardage I was waiting all year for him to be the guy who got called up, and they bring Miller up, they bring Kirkwood up, and they bring Sims in from the outside, and they bring Deontay Johnson in from the outside. And you've got a punt returner sitting on there. I'm wondering, what is wrong with Dayton Wade? You know, who did he piss off to not get a chance here when was going? But there had to be something from a practice standpoint that was apparent to the coaches that wasn't going to work out with Wade, because they had all those problems with the punt return game last year. It's like, why is this guy not getting a chance?
Yes, I thought he would get a shot too, especially before we brought Deontay in. It seemed a little desperate. And I see that Anthony Miller, of course, is someone else we're talking about. I don't know. He kind of just gives me a comforting feeling when he's out there. It's like he's producing. He's producing. It doesn't look flashy. He's barely open. He just seems to come down with the ball. And of course, he had a big play in this one that almost wasn't a big play that turned out to be a big play. But yeah, I mean, he was on the field for that final drive in Buffalo, and here he is again. Where it's just like, I feel like if he has the play, he would be like, we have our top 6 receivers, obviously. They're all going to make the team. He would be the guy that I would elevate if I needed a receiver.
Okay.
Just for receiving.
He's your top of the practice squad. Now, let's say you can only keep one other practice squad guy. Who do you keep?
That's a tough one. I kind of lean towards, I don't know. I really like Malik Cunningham, too. I kind of lean towards Kirkwood.
Okay.
You like Wade a lot?
I would still go Wade. I think that the age difference is getting to be too much. And I think there's probably too much in the way of similarity between either Miller and Kirkwood. Both of them can go up and get the football, even though I don't think Miller is quite as big. And also what you could otherwise find on the street sometimes in terms of receivers who've been effectively out of the league for a few years, which is where we are with Kirkwood and frankly with Miller. Miller's had one catch in several years now.
Right.
And Kirkwood, I think, has been some similar record like that as well.
Wade does give you that shiftiness and quickness, the make you miss ability that you were talking about.
Yeah. If you lost Keaton Mitchell, and let's freaking cross our fingers on that one, he wouldn't be a bad guy to have as a misdirection option to go along with a Wester if you didn't want to give all the plays to Wester. They have to do a lot of shifting around if they lost Keaton Mitchell. Keaton Mitchell, I think, is going to be really central to this offense. And I take the over, by the way, you mentioned 8 snaps per game on that. I think I take the over.
Touches
is what I mean. Oh, yeah. Touches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eight touches. That's very reasonable. I might even take the under on that in terms of touches, but that's we're in the right ballpark. So to get,
I would love to see it. And I think you have to get involved.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd have to get, I mean, first of all, if he's lined up directly in the backfield, that's going to be like 13 times on the field to get 8 touches, maybe, because he's going to run the ball some, and he's going to have other plays where he's going to be a receiver. I would think that's pressing it probably in terms of snaps. So, yeah, I was having a discussion with somebody else on the sideline the other day, and 10 was the over under. I thought that's a really good over under in terms of snaps. I don't know which way I'd go.
Yeah, we just feel like when it comes to Keaton, you know, it's 3rd and 9, mm-hmm. and we're in our own and like at our own 20. That's Justice Hill territory. That's when you need the pass protection. You need Lamar to push the ball down the field. But okay, it's the 3rd series of the first half. That's when I would have Keaton Mitchell on the field, getting his touches in there, or maybe the 2nd or 3rd series of the second half. Have him in there and take that type of role. And if it gets to 3rd and 9, you bring Hill in again, you know, just like you would Harry. But mm-hmm. I think that Keaton is kind of like a Derrick Henry. He's going to work in with Henry while Hill does his own thing. Right. Is kind of how I would look at it.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable interpretation of how this will work out. I'll go through quickly the wide receivers because I do want to talk about the offensive line here. Cunningham, Banks, and Guillory were the last 3 off the bench. None of them did anything. Unfortunately, Banks had the catch wiped out by his own OPI, which was kind of sad.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the offensive line. They rested Stanley Linderbaum. We already talked about the cameo they gave to Voorhees, Rosengarten. And it was really Bullock who played 4 series at center, who was the 3rd additional starter. Okay, no, the Noteboom was in there for 4 series as well. So Voorhees and Falele, I'm sorry, Voorhees, Falele, and Rosengarten, those 3 got 2 series each. And then we had Noteboom and Bullock each get 4 series each to begin the game. So they got a little bit more run.
Right, Noteboom got action on both sides again, left tackle, right mm-hmm. tackle. And I just want to start with him because I thought that this was a step backwards as far as just gameplay. You know, he caused some, you know, you talk about Cooper Rush under pressure, getting hit. Noteboom seemed like he was the early offender on some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. He's responsible for 2 quarterback hits and at least 1 pressure. I might have, as we went through this and we looked at some of these to determine whether each play was pressure or not, I actually noticed another half that I think should go to him. So it might be 1.5 and 2 would be a reasonable assumption of what he had in this game. But it wasn't a good outing. I'm sure it's one he'd want to have back. As far as Falele went, I thought he was fine. It was largely a recovery from that first week. He still is very ponderous in the run game. And I'm not as concerned about that as I know a lot of other people are. There's people who are just screaming at every time he's too slow to make a run block. He can improve that some by being a better decider, you know, be more decisive in level 2 in particular. He had one of those in this game where he's slow making his block. But there's just certain limitations with Daniel Falele you live with because the other elements of his game are very good. He's a good pass blocker. Doesn't get penalized very much at all. And if you do those 2 things, you don't need to be a great run blocker.
I think he, I've made my feelings pretty clear about it, you know, how I feel about that. I would prefer to have a different style, but I mean, you cannot argue with somebody who's good at pass block. And that's the number one job of these offensive linemen. What I will say is I've noticed, a difference between this year and last year. I don't think he looks any quicker. I don't think the, you know, the 10 pounds or whatever he looked. But I did notice that he looks like he is dead set on getting off the snap, being the first guy off the snap. Like he is moving with the ball, pushing it, pushing the boundaries. Because there are a couple of reach blocks that I've seen him make that I don't think he makes last year. And he's not doing it because he's any quicker. He's doing it because he's getting that position. He's moving before the defensive lineman.
What do you think about him using his hands better this year?
I think that's natural. I think that he's a hugger. He's a hugger more than a puncher. And I don't know. I mean, he's got to use his size. When he does get his hands on you and his hands are in the right spot, the rep is over. He's winning. Mm-hmm. He's winning big. There's a lot of big Lamar plays from last year. If you look at the Daniel Falele highlights on my channel, where when he wins, Ken, it's given Lamar plenty of room to step up. If somebody else, the tacklers are getting, you know, pressed around the edges and that kind of thing. Props to him. When he loses big and can get you behind the stake. He doesn't get you penalized. He might not get penalized, but he's a tackle for loss waiting to happen, which is kind of like a penalty too. I mean, you lose the down and everything on that. But I'm not going to complain. I'm not on there every day, social media complaining. It is what it is. They love him. They want to give him a chance. I'm just rooting for him. I just think he runs a little hot and cold. And I think that we have a run offense now where we can execute any type of run. I would like to see a more versatile right guard in there, but it's not happening. So why waste your breath?
Yeah. Maybe we talk about this more during the second half of the show. I just want to talk about the rest of the order of entry here. So we at least get that out there. Then we'll move on. So at left tackle, Vinson and left guard Dellinger play the entire rest of the game, 64 snaps together at left tackle, left guard. Great continuity experience for both of those guys, by the way. And I'm very excited about it. And those are the two players we scored this game because the trials are true full game experience with 64 snaps.
Very nice. Very nice. That's a valuable experience for both of those guys. And Ken coming up next week, they might see if they can go the distance.
Yeah, it's very possible. I think if you put Noteboom in bubble wrap, you're giving Vincent the entire game. And right now, the one thing Vincent really, really looks like he's enjoying it right now. I want to get into that with the scoring a little bit later in part two. But there was something that was something I really loved about his play was just how much he's obviously trying to finish, trying to get to level two to make blocks, and his after emoting when he makes a good block, he knows it and he really celebrates right on field immediately. It's not necessarily the best thing, but I'm glad he knows when that's a great rep and you know I want to do that again kind of thing. I'm just happy to see that. All right. Who do we not talk about? Samak and Holski were the number two and number three centers. That's the way it was last week. I don't see I think you mentioned this earlier. I don't see a spot for Samak on the top 10 at offensive line. And Holski's further down still in terms of the order. Samak has one particular problem that showed up a couple times in 2 weeks, and that is he does not maintain the proper depth to deal with stunt handoffs. He's not aware of the guy next to him and figuring out that, hey, it's important that we be at the same level so we can make this exchange. And I believe in each case, in each game, he's had a quarterback hit that's resulted because of exactly that failure to match depth.
Yeah, I think overall he looked better last preseason. There was a lot of hope for Samak last preseason. This preseason, just to see him running behind Bullock, first of all, and then the play in the game versus players who were obviously further down the other team's depth chart, I expected a little bit more.
Cleveland, you know, you love him, you hate him. He obviously had a gut steamroll the way Falele did in week one. It's not good. It was only a pressure in Cleveland's case. It doesn't really matter. It could have been worse. Dalcourt was in just for two series, which is interesting. Dalcourt's dropped off on the Ravens' offensive line totem pole since last year. I thought he might be the backup center, a guy they would have as a versatile guard center player last year because he's big. but they didn't follow through with that after the preseason, which leads me to believe it's possible they might not follow through with it for Bullock. But I just didn't feel like Bullock is further ahead of Samak than the Dalcourt Samak competition was last year.
Okay, I got what you're saying.
It's the backup, not the number one guy, obviously. And then let's see, we had Penning come in. Penning looked actually pretty decent for three series there, and that's all at the end against the Cowboy threes. But you know, hey, it's something.
He's got a little feisty in this tone too, like his brother.
Yeah, I wish he was a little longer. Then I'd be more convinced that he'd be maybe a backup tackle, and this team could use another backup tackle right now. Could really use another backup tackle. The guy on the right side, Lichtenhahn, he looks a year away also, developmental guy. That said, when the Ravens cut him, not if, I think that there's a reasonable chance some other team will pick him up and add him to their 53. It kind of all depends on where tackle depth is across the league when that's decided. And even if he makes it through to the practice squad, he's a claim risk on a week-to-week basis.
I think overall, this game reminded me of some of the older Ravens preseason games, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But we won. We won this game. If they weren't keeping score, if you didn't know the score, if the scoring plays were erased and you just looked at down to down, you know, pick a random down here, random down there, we kind of kicked their butts physically on both sides of the ball. And that always starts with the offensive line and defensive line. So it was very impressive. It was a kind of like a performance from the Ravens defensive heydays of yesteryear.
Yeah. That was definitely doing it. Looked a lot like a lot of the wins in the long preseason winning streak to me. Like, there's absolutely knocking the crap out of the opponent's twos and threes because your twos and threes are better. Kind of reminds me of Earl Weaver managed baseball teams in the 1970s that could always, you know, platoon and match up well in both ends of a doubleheader, whereas most teams or a lot of teams could only play a good team in one game of a doubleheader. All right. Jason, always a pleasure talking football with you. What's going on Huddled Up Films? Tell people about that and where they can contact you online.
Yeah. Well, hey, having a great time over there, doing cut ups this week so far. I caught up Teddy Buchanan, Jay Higgins. As I said, I spent a lot of time on the defense this week, so far. And, so, you know, you got your season highlights on all players of all positions, including the offensive line. And so you can look up your favorite players. You can look at Daniel Faalele and what he looks like when he's going well. And then Wednesday nights, live, 9 p.m. Eastern. Ken will be on with me this week. We're going to go over the roster. Yeah, heck yeah. And so, yeah, every Wednesday night, get together, have a really great group in there. The discussion, the chat has been just growing and growing. So getting a lot of feedback. So yeah, you can catch me at Huddle It Up Films on Twitter or on YouTube, but YouTube channel is doing really well, Ken.
Okay. Yeah, great to hear. And Jason, always a pleasure again to have you on. Other folks out there, hit me up with a DM if you want to talk about a Ravens concern you have about the 2025 season. So we're all a little bit worried that the window is going to be missed during these next either 1 year, 3 years, whatever, however long you think it's going to last. What's going to trip up the 2025 roster, 2025 Ravens? That's what I want to talk to you about. Plan a little show about it, hopefully 15, 20 minutes per episode. So give us some things to worry about until that opening day comes up after the last exhibition, after last preseason game, I should say. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Hey, thanks, Ken. Appreciate you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.